paid
260 euros for a pair of Crocs, man.
Those shoes pretty much broke my foot.
It's only going downhill from here.
What up, guys? This is Josh.
And this is Fobs. And this is the Kickback Pod.
Hello and welcome back to the Kickback Pod. I am your host, Josh Dominic. Just wanted to send a shout out to all of you guys who have been listening to the pod, especially those of you who listened to last episode, the interview with Sean Goh, and give us a lot of great feedback on that episode. As promised, the interviews are going to continue in 2023. And this week, we have a very, very special guest. He is Drew Joyner, one of the most requested guests on the podcast. I know I was very excited to interview him because I'm just a big fan of his content. He is a content creator in the fashion space, one of the very best out there. And this was simply one of my favorite conversations that I've had so far. We get into how Drew got into fashion in the first place, what it's like being a full-time content creator, and we also get his thoughts on what he thinks are some of the best sneakers out there right now, what's going to be possibly trending this year, and just his overall take on both fashion and sneakers. I thought it was an amazing episode, and I am absolutely sure you guys will enjoy it. So without further ado, here he is, Drew Joyner. All right, we are back, the Kickback Pod once again, episode number, we're going into the 50s now, episode number 52. We had a guest last week that you guys really enjoyed, and Sean Goh. Thank you guys a lot for the feedback. And today, we have a very, very, very special guest, none other than Drew Joyner. You might know him from YouTube or TikTok or Instagram. I mean, he's pretty much everywhere and definitely easily one of the best content creators in the fashion space. I'm honored to have you on the pod. Drew, what it do? Welcome to the Kickback Pod.
Thanks so much, Josh, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate the introduction, excuse me. It's oftentimes I'm on the other side of giving introductions, so to hear one come my way, I feel incredibly honored, man. It's a privilege to be here, dude. I've been listening to, or I've been watching a lot of your videos over the course of the last couple of years, and I've listened to a couple of episodes, and yeah, I feel honored to be here, bro.
Awesome, man. Thank you. I mean, dude, I've actually been subscribed to your channel since you had around like 10K followers. And the growth has been insane. So congratulations, first
Thank
of all.
You, man.
Just absolutely killing it on every platform. So it's dope to see, but it's not surprising, to be honest. Like, I don't subscribe to a lot of people, but when I started following you around 10K, I'm like, man, this guy makes great videos. So
Definitely.
I knew you were gonna blow up. You know, you're just one of those, you just knew you'd blow up.
You know, a lot of people said that, you know, early on too. Like, oh, just wait, it's gonna happen. And while I feel like I have grown since 10K, of course, I'm at like, I think 158 or something like that.
Life flex.
To me, you know, I have a long way to go in terms of what I have for myself. Let's just put that out there too. So
Okay. All right. No, that's good, man. That's good. It's all about, my girlfriend tells me this all the time, positive visualization. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's good, man. So, 100%. Yeah. Definitely in 2023, the Kickback Pod, we wanted to use the platform as a space to highlight some of the best creators, just some of the best people in this space. So we did have Sean Goh on last week. This week, Drew Joyner. So man, let's get started, man. I can't wait for this interview. I've been looking forward to this for a while.
For sure.
So normally before we get started, we just give the audience just a little bit of a breakdown of just what we've been rocking in the last couple of weeks. So by the way, I know this is a sneaker pod, but I know you're just not all about sneakers. You rock everything. I mean, you made videos about, I feel like you're one of those people who made mules popular.
Oh, gosh.
I know you're rocking everything. So last couple of weeks, what have you been rocking on feet?
Yeah, you're right. I think, Josh, I think it's important to say that even before I state like what I've been rocking, for me, like, sneakers has always been a big part of my style journey, and we'll kind of get into that as well. So I would say that the majority of the collection that I have is sneakers still, even though I have a lot of kind of different items of footwear now, and that just comes with, you know, like that exploration for myself. But recently, I'm looking to the left right now, recently I've been rocking and wearing, in terms of sneakers, a lot of, or not a lot, but I've been wearing my Onitsuka Tiger Mexico 66s a ton.
And they're the yellow ones?
Yeah, the Kill Bill yellow ones, the, I can't remember what other movie they're in, but yes, Bruce Lee joints is what people sometimes call them, even though it's a different shoe. But yeah, the Onitsuka Tiger Mexico 66s, the yellow, kind of, they're kind of like a Adidas Samba adjacent, like the way that you, when you look down at that 4 foot area, it kind of looks like an Adidas Samba. I've been wearing those a ton. And I love those because I feel like, I don't know, they just bring an extra like pop of color to an outfit. Especially with the outfits I've been wearing, I wear a lot of like dark denim. And then when I pair the dark denim with these yellow shoes, there's always, I don't know, I just always love the way it looks visually. So I've been wearing those a ton. What else have I been wearing a lot in terms of sneakers?
You know, sneaker historians will tell you that Onitsuka pair, it's one of the OG sneakers, period. Because
for sure,
apparently the Nike Cortez was very much based on that shoe.
Yes, so of course. I think as the story goes, those brands, they used to be, like the original brand used to be the same brand, and then they split up, and then one company, Nike, made the Cortez, and then Onitsuka made the, you know, the Onitsuka Tiger. I think that's correct, if I'm not mistaken.
Something like that.
Yeah. Other than that, I think because it's snowy here in Colorado, honestly, I've been wearing too many sneakers. I don't know. I'm the type of person, I like to keep some of my shoes, not like crispy, but like, I don't know, like when there's snow on the ground, I don't want to get my nice shoes or whatever, like all slushed up and things like that. So I've been wearing a lot of like Suicoke boots. There are these Suicoke Bauer boots, which I just, oh man, perfect. I love these boots for the snow. Like they just look really good. Yeah, probably like those two pair, like pretty consistently. And then every day I wear Birkenstocks in the house, like Birkenstock Bostons.
Bro, you have no idea how popular Birkenstock here in Germany is, like supreme, bro. So as soon as the weather starts like getting hot a little bit, every single Birkenstock in Berlin and other parts of Germany, there's literally lineups out the store. That's all day.
Hilarious. Man,
bro, Germans, yep, go crazy for it. Well, you know the German way of saying it is actually Birkenstock.
Birkenstock. Okay. Yes. That's good to know when I go to Germany. When I, yeah, nice Birkenstocks, friend.
Yeah, man, that's the right way to say it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably, I don't know. I can't think of anything else right now that I've been wearing a ton. I've been literally living and dying by the Onitsukas, so.
Okay. No, that's nice, man. I feel like those are starting to creep up in popularity a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah, as for myself, so in the last couple of weeks, rocked the Union Jordan 4s quite a ton. I just kind of fell in love with that pair again. I still have the tongue down on mine, and I don't think I'm ever going to roll up the tongue. I just like that look, you know. But, you know, a lot of people
traditionalist.
A lot of people, as soon as they got that pair, they immediately cut the stitching and rolled up the tongue. But not me, keeping it that way. And also, you guys might have seen on my Instagram, I was in a banana costume last weekend, and that's because I was in Cologne. By the way, in case you didn't know, Cologne is like the city like near Amsterdam. It's in the western part of Germany. And every year they have this huge festival. It's called Carnival. It's kind of like Halloween for adults in a way. So basically like the entire city dresses up in all kinds of different costumes. So a bunch of my friends, we all went there. We were all dressed up as fruits. I dressed up as a banana. And of course, I had to have shoes that match the banana. So I wore the Iowa Dunks, the yellow and black, to match the black and yellow on the banana. And I somehow pulled off a banana fit, man. I got to give myself credit there.
That's not easy to do.
No, it's not. It's not. So that's what I've been rocking, Union 4s and the Iowa Dunks. What about awesome, latest man. Pickup? What about latest pickups? Like anything? It can even be clothing, by the way. Any latest pickups for you in the last, I don't know, 2-3 weeks?
Yeah. I think I just picked up a pair of 990 V3s. These, I don't even know the exact name of this colorway. It's
That's the tan green.
Tan greens, exactly. Yeah. I feel like they could have came up with a better name for this.
Yeah, no doubt. I actually said that in my review too, yeah, that they should change the names.
Yeah. Like the name was so forgetful that's why I honestly do not know. Yeah, the name. They could have said, like, I don't know, like chicken and broccoli or something like that. Something unique, right?
Bro, that's on Reddit. That's exactly what people are calling it.
Yeah, I think I've seen that somewhere, right? That's like the unofficial name. So I just picked up those. And I'm curious to, you know, wear those a ton more in the spring, because I feel like the new buck on there, and I don't know, the shape of it really is nice, and it's not like any other shape of any other New Balance 990 V3, but yeah, I'm excited about these for sure. I'm a New Balance head.
Oh yeah, no, that's pretty obvious. Do you like the canvas on that pair? Because that's what's kind of unique about that specific pair compared to most 990s.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I think that the canvas, the nubuck, those two materials that are part of this shoe. I don't know, they make it look a little bit different when you kind of have it in hand. And like I said, the structure of it's like slightly, like ever so slightly different than mesh and suede, because, you know, mesh, and I haven't even worn mine yet. Mine are still dead stock, so we'll see how it kind of fares. But mesh kind of, it's not malleable in the sense, but it doesn't necessarily retain its form maybe as well as something like canvas will. So we'll see how that plays out over many, many wears.
Yeah, man. I think you've built a reputation as having a very solid New Balance collection, and those colors definitely, I think they go pretty well with stuff in your wardrobe.
Thank you. So, really.
Yeah, man. So great pickup for sure.
What you got?
recently, I picked up a bunch of Jordan 4s. There were two that came out last week, which was Jordan 4 Craft. I don't know if you've seen that pair, but it's like this.
Looking at it right now.
Yeah, it's got like some super premium materials, like all kinds of different materials. Yeah, canvas, leather, suede, pretty much every material you can think of, like all in one shoe. So it's pretty unique in that sense.
Yeah, I like the color.
Pretty clean colorway as well. And the other pair of 4s I picked up were the Jordan 4 Seafoam, which is just a classic colorway. I mean, it's not a classic colorway. It's a classic color blocking. It's based on the Fire Red 4s.
Yep.
But it's just like the Fire Red 4s in a green color, which I prefer personally. I'm not really a big... I don't know about you guys, Drew, but for me, like, I'm not really into red shoes. Even though, like, when you think of the most classic Jordans, they all have red on them. Yeah. I'm typically not a big fan of, like, red on shoes. So I prefer having green, personally.
I think so, too. Seafoams. I think I'm right there with you. Only pair of red shoes I have are Lost and... Or actually, I have two. I have Lost and Found Jordan 1s, and then I have these Camion boots, which are also red. And I don't know. Red is just... It seems like an occasion type of shoe, right? Like you wear it to like add a pop of color to a particular outfit or an occasion. And it's, I don't know, some people do a good job of also integrating it into daily fits, but that's just the way I'm thinking about it.
You weren't copping those big red boots then?
Hell no.
You made a great video about that, by the way, man. I totally agreed with everything you said in that video.
Yeah, we can talk about the big red boots. I think there's like a lot of ideas that I like. Like a lot of other creators also made really good videos. I think this is Antoine. I had him on the podcast, on my podcast. Made a good video about him. I saw Mark Boudelier make a TikTok about him.
Wisdom had an insane TikTok.
Wisdom's TikTok was insane about him too. I'll admit that, like when I first, you know, saw them, I reached out to Mitch. If I was like, are these your guys' boots? And they were like, yeah, these are our boots. And I was like, yeah, the marketing for this is insane. They were like, thank you. And so I think that they obviously understand kind of the gravity of the moment and what is going on with the big red boots. But yeah, I think for most people, it's not a very practical shoe, but it is a very visually interesting shoe and a very fun shoe. And it shows the moment we're in terms of fashion. It's just a very crazy time right now when it comes to footwear, fashion, and everything else.
I got to give it props for the marketing. The marketing was insane, man. Viral insane. Marketing at its finest. They did a great job.
Yeah, I can't think of another time. I mean, there have been other times, but I don't know. This one stands out for sure. Definitely stands
for sure,
out.
For sure. All right. Well, now let's get into... Well, no. That was good. That was going to come off wrong. I was going to say, let's get into Drew Joyner, but no.
Yo, time out.
Yo, big time pause.
Time out. Pause. That is not right, okay.
No, that's not how we're going to start off the pod, man. But the podcast, you're the guest. This episode is all about you. So let's get into the questions, man. I've always wanted to know, you know, you grew up in Boulder, Colorado. You're still in Boulder. And it's not... really, you know, what city you think of when it comes to fashionable places in the world. So what were some of your early fashion inspirations?
Oh, of course. Josh, not to, you know, shit on you or anything like that, I grew up in Denver, Colorado.
Oh, all right. All right.
Boulder is a great place too, though. I love Boulder. But that's just slight correction. No mess up. I'm just kind of messing with you. But in Denver, I think that, like you said, you're right. I think Colorado in general doesn't have a perception of being a traditionally stylish, fashionable place, but it does have its own style and look to it, right? I think like Ralph Lauren has done campaigns depicting the, you know, Rocky Mountain Range and things like that. But as a young kid growing up here in, you know, the 2000s and 2010s, the biggest kind of influence for me when it comes to fashion starts with sports, right? I was a big basketball player growing up, and you know, basketball and having a professional sports team here in the Nuggets, it means that there's a proximity to the game of basketball that maybe, like, if I grew up in Iowa or Idaho or other parts of the US or Kansas or Wyoming that don't have basketball teams, maybe I wouldn't have the inclination to be, or I wouldn't have had the inclination to want to pursue basketball and be on the Nuggets, because those are the dreams that I had as a kid. Like, when Allen Iverson played for the Nuggets, I was like, yo, AI is my guy. Like, I want to be like AI and Carmelo and all these dudes who, you know, made Nuggets basketball interesting to me when I was a kid. So for me, it all started with hoop, and it all started with, like, you know, what basketball sneakers was I most interested in high school and in college? And what were the basketball sneakers that the best players in my area were wearing, right? And that's like how it began to sort of develop, right? And I remember my senior year in high school, I begged my mom for like my senior year to like get a pair of Kobe 9s. And even before that, like, I remember picking up like Air Max 90s, like from Kohl's on sale, like when I was a sophomore in high school and little things like that. And the thing about sneakers is, cause I started with sneakers really when it comes to like taking note of my appearance. The thing about sneakers is that once you have a particular shoe, that you really enjoy, like you have to be able to match the energy of that shoe with the other clothing that's on your body, right? So for me, like I couldn't just have the Air Max 90s, even though they were a half size too big, which is a story for another day. I wanted to make sure, okay, I have the Air Max 90s. What pair of pants could I get? And we're not talking about anything crazy. We're still talking about Kohl's and PacSun and all the things that, you know, more budget places to get clothing at, right? Especially when you're younger, you're a high schooler, you don't have really any money. Especially, you know, someone like myself, I was focused on school and sports, so I wasn't really working as much. That's kind of where it began to develop from, is sports, the aesthetic of basketball, which has an aesthetic just like soccer, just like volleyball and tennis and all these other sports that have aesthetics. And then from there, it just kind of snowballed and reiterated itself. And I began to grow, you know, interest in, you know, Ultra Boost and Supreme and kind of like that, you know, very 2015 through 2019 era of like product offerings that just was this insane level of, you know, StockX and GOAT and sneakers app and Adidas Confirmed app and Yeezy Supply and all these things that like are part of that era, and it kind of transitioned to where I am now. So that's like, I was talking to someone about this the other day, this cinematographer named Kai, and we were talking about, you know, that's the Spark Note version of my journey. There's a lot more, but that's the spark note that I'll give right now.
Dude, that's, it's so interesting to me how, like, a lot of people say, even people in fashion, they always say that sneakers was kind of what kickstarted their whole love for fashion, which is actually, like, really interesting to hear you as well. And by the way, a lot of the listeners of this podcast are from Europe, and for all my European listeners, Drew played Division One basketball, and Europeans have no idea what that means.
No.
And guys, you, my European listeners, trust me, Drew can ball. So Division One basketball is pretty much the highest level of basketball besides the NBA in America.
Amateur sports, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like this is like, this guy can ball, man. So it's that's impressive, bro. Like, was there a player you modeled your game after? You mentioned AI.
When I was really young, I was obsessed with AI because I was just small and young and played basketball. But as I got older, the guys I would try to imitate were like Tim Hardaway, Steph Curry. I wanted to be like, my game is revolved around scoring and shooting a lot of times. That's probably my strongest accolade on my 2K rating. So like, you know, the great scorers, you know, Brandon Jennings was a, like when I was younger, like when he first got into the league, he was a good one. Michael Redd, Jackson.
Bro, Michael Redd was so underrated, man.
So underrated.
And that guy, I mean, was a bucket.
He was a bucket. And people don't know, like, you know, that just kind of shows the, also my dad, you know what I mean? Like, those are the players that he, you know, watched and we would study and things like that. So a lot of those players, and then some of like the some other players, like even like Del Curry, and just a lot of great scorers that I tried to imitate playing basketball.
No, that's dope, man. That's dope. So you've been doing YouTube now for, since the pandemic, am I right? Or were you doing it before that?
Yeah, since the pandemic, correct.
Since the pandemic. So like, what actually made you want to start a YouTube channel about fashion?
I think that I always had a little bit of an itch to be a YouTuber, a little bit. I started during the pandemic, but I had made videos when I was in college with my girlfriend, Lauren. Like, we would go to the, like, I picked up a pair of, I can't even remember the exact naming convention, but it was when ALD first collaborated with New Balance, some of those first sneakers, I believe in 2018 or 2019.
The 997.
Yeah, 997, I believe. Exactly, 997. We went to the library, and I was like, these shoes are, like, so freaking cool, like, the box, everything about this. Like, I want to make, like, a little video about them. So we went to the library. I had my iPhone. I think it was, like, 6 or 7 or something like that. Had it in landscape mode, and I told my girlfriend, okay, you're going to hold the camera above the box. I'm going to take the shoes out of the box, and then I'm going to show the shoes on the camera. And there was no words, right? So like that was like a part of my like college experience. It was so small. I'm still dating her now, and she remembers it like it was yesterday. And now she sees me at 150, and she's like, "Good job, boo." But so like I always kind of had an interest in making YouTube videos. Not like this could be a career or anything like that. But I watch a lot of YouTube, so I wanted to give my best effort to try to create videos. But specifically during the pandemic, the reason why I did it is because I had a brand at the time. It was called Edward Joyner. And I wanted to not only bring more awareness to the brand, but I wanted to kind of be a thought leader when it comes to, you know, men's fashion at the time, right? And what better way to be a thought leader than to give my thoughts, give my opinions, help others buy into fashion that, you know, hopefully will help improve their lives, right? And so I did that. I started with a lot of workwear pants to begin with, Levi's, sneaker reviews, Dickies, things of that nature. And then from there, and like workwear was pretty popular, I would say 2020 and 2021. It still is. But I would say, like, you know, even then, a lot of people were doing a lot of searching on YouTube for workwear items. And I thought that there was an opportunity there. And I started talking about Dickies A74s, and people knew me as a guy who liked Dickies 874s. And then I started talking a little bit more about Carhartt, and because, you know, there was the double knee, you know, craze, which I feel like we're still in the remnants of, and you know, Carhartt cargo pants and things like that. So yeah, the reason why, like I said, is because I wanted to be a thought leader for the brand, and just I don't know, I had a curiosity to be on YouTube, and I didn't necessarily know that at the time, but now looking back, like it's really clear to me that it's something that was a part of my interest, but and I just gave it my best shot, right? So.
Oh man, it's been great to see your video progression too through the years.
Yeah,
I've personally noticed like one thing about your channel, like for example, some of your most popular videos are your trendy versus timeless videos mm-hmm. that you make, mm-hmm. and I feel like you can group fashion content creators into those two categories, trendy and timeless, mm-hmm. because I feel like most of the fashion YouTubers and content creators I follow, they're always making trendy content, meaning like, oh, okay, it's February, it's March, time for a Uniqlo U spring haul review video, you know, or just like the best shirts for spring, you know, like this. It's kind of like they're all doing the same videos every year, every single year.
Yeah.
Whereas there's creators like yourself who make very timeless content, meaning like it doesn't matter what time of the year, what year it is, you can still watch it. You know, you make, for example, you've made videos, a video you made recently that has been like so helpful for me was how to find pants that actually fit you.
Yeah.
Mainly because you and I have the exact same measurements.
I love it.
So I was like, oh man, like this is so helpful. But you know, videos like that, like you make all these kinds of videos that you can just watch no matter what year it is, no matter what time of the year it is. It's just very timeless content. So is that something you think of when you make your content? Like, do you specifically want content that people can watch anytime? Or because, you know, as a content creator, sometimes you feel the urge to, or the temptation to, you know, fall into the trend and make trendy content too, but you don't seem to really do that. So is that something you actually think of when making your content?
Yeah, I would say I do. I'd say for a lot of the videos, there's a balance, right? Because like, for example, talking about the big red boots is a relatively trendy topic, but it could be looked at as a kind of time capsule topic as well, right? Where you can look back and say, this is what we thought about the big red boots. And maybe in a matter of 6 months, there will be another version of the big red boots that we can look back in February of 2023 and say, okay, this is where this deviates from. This is where this comes from. So yeah, I would say to answer your question, I do think about the longevity of the videos, of course. Because that's the one beautiful thing about YouTube. It's this evergreen kind of platform. Unlike TikTok, unlike Instagram, most people aren't scrolling down to see that in 2019, I was at ComplexCon and I took a picture with Sean Witherspoon. Like, most people don't know that. Because, I mean, who's going to scroll all the way down to my first picture on Instagram? Like, it's just, most people aren't going to do that. And on YouTube, because of the way that videos and algorithms work, is that a video can be in circulation for 1, 2, 3 years, as long as it's relevant, as long as the information is relevant to someone in 2026. I mean, why not make a video that has that level of longevity? I'm not always thinking about it. Like, it's not top of mind. I usually just think about like, okay, what would be interesting to talk about? Like this week, we're talking about something called the Diderot effect, which I can't wait to have everyone react to this thing that I read. And that's another thing, like the more I kind of develop my interest in fashion and sneakers and anthropology and consumer behavior, the more I see a path for myself that I'm kind of trailblazing. Because I feel like, you know, fashion and sneakers, a lot of videos have been created, a lot of videos have been done. And so it's like, I love reviews. I watch a lot of your reviews. I watch a lot of your videos. Like for me, when it comes to reviews and things like that, I make a lot of my reviews short form, like on TikTok or Reels. And there's so many different types of content that is being distributed, in the fashion space. And so as long as I can create videos that I feel like are, you know, I feel like that honor a part of like my idea generation, honor a part of my creativity in the current moment, then I feel good about them. And if their like longevity is also something that's a part of the video, that's fantastic as well. So
yeah, that's what I find just really interesting about your channel. You got me thinking a little bit about like, you know, what type of content I should even start putting out. It's a little bit tougher to do that in the sneaker world, of course, because there's releases every single week and you have to, you know, drop reviews on them. So
I want to ask you,
yeah,
I want to ask you, because I think this is a conversation I had with myself, especially early on with my channel, is that with sneakers, there are some sneakers, and I've like studied your channel and Sean Go and like Kais Omar and Seth
Fowler.
Fowler, thank you so much. I was about to say Seth Rogen. I don't even know what I was thinking, man. Seth Fowler, like it doesn't even, yeah. Seth Fowler, and Seth Fowler is really successful, right? His videos do really well almost every upload. But when I look at Sean, I look at you, I look at some of the other creators, Hess Kicks, whoever it may be, a lot of times you guys make really great videos, but the view count, the amount of people who see it is based on whether or not that shoe, do people care about this shoe, right? Like, or if they care about the shoe, like for example, the Lost and Founds, like they generated a ton of buzz. But the issue is that there are so many reviews of the shoe that how do I choose Josh Dominic over Sean Go, right? Or Hez Kicks. So my question to you is that for you, how are you looking at trying to distinguish yourself as a creator on sneaker YouTube? Like, what do you think it is about you that stands out? Flipping it back on you.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I actually haven't been asked that question before, but it is, yeah, it's something that I think of all the time. So yeah, I think the nature of review videos in general are that most of the people coming to your videos, they're coming for the product. They're not really coming for you. That's always been the case. Like pretty much I'll go back to any video and I look at my audience breakdown. Most of them is search traffic. Right. So percentage of my subscribers actually watching the videos, it just depends on which shoe they're interested in. They're going to watch it.
Right.
So that's definitely the negative side of not just sneaker YouTube, but like product reviews in general. Like, you know, Marquise Brownlee, you know, like you're not going to watch every phone video he makes. You're going to watch the phones you're interested in. Right. So
it's
just the nature of that field, I would say.
Yeah.
So I think what I try to do differently with my videos, and I would say even Sean Go to a certain extent because we both have very similar audiences, uh-huh. is that we try to go just a bit more in depth into the topics. We're not so caught up in, you know, being the first to review something and you know, just putting out like rushed content. You know, like I don't care to be the first to put out a video because I'd rather, you know, get the shoe, try it out a little bit, you know, and like really like take my time with it and then put out the content.
Right.
So it's a little bit different in that case. So I just want to make sure that I'm being very honest in my videos rather than do content just for the sake of just putting out something early. So I think it also depends on what your objectives are. So when you're in the review space, then if your goal is to have the fastest growing channel ever, you better be the first one to review that.
Yep.
That's just the fact. So
you better have it like two months early, honestly.
Exactly. Yeah. So Seth, for example, decided this very early on that like he wanted to be at the top of the game. So from a very, very early on, he would get shoes way earlier than everyone else.
Yeah.
And basically put out reviews. Yeah. And his channel grew as a result.
Yeah.
I had decided from a very early stage that I never wanted to do content creation full time.
Yep.
So that's why like I never really cared to do that. I'm totally fine just every week entering raffles like everyone else, getting shoes. If I don't get them, whatever, that's fine. I'll get the shoes that I can get and I'll make reviews, because at the end of the day, it's not like my whole livelihood is from content creation. So
that's
kind of like how I approached it.
100%. It makes a lot of sense.
But going back to you, man, you are the star of today. So, and I don't know, can I ask you, do you do content creation full time?
I do. So content creation is what I do full time. Mm.
Okay. So I don't think people realize how difficult that is, especially nowadays. There's so many different platforms, right? There's TikTok. You're very big on Reels. Your Instagram is popping. YouTube, of course. So describe like your typical week as a content creator.
Oh yeah, so, yeah. Typical week in the life.
Yeah, exactly.
I think in 2023, I've gotten my work schedule to a much healthier place, and it's gone through a ton of iterations, right? I think in like late 2021 is when I would consider myself like, okay, I am generating enough revenue. I am, you know, obtaining the opportunities. I'm a full-time content creator, probably like fall, winter of 2021. So from fall, winter of 2021 to spring, summer right now, like February 2023, I've had a lot of different kind of moments when it comes to like my week. My current iteration involves like I work out every single morning except for, you know, the weekend. So I work out 5 days a week. That's really important for like mental clarity for me in terms of like, okay, I have to like push myself physically to kind of get the endorphins and the chemicals going to like feel creative, right? And one of the best things about Colorado is like, I don't even have the blinds open right now, but it's so sunny outside right now. So like Colorado is a beautiful place to be in because of just, I don't know, it makes you want to go outside and do things. But usually I'm in the gym, so it doesn't really matter. So week, like most days of the week, I'm going to the gym. After the gym, and usually at the gym, I'm doing some form of cardio or weightlifting or something like that. I don't know if you want me to get this detailed, but I'm going to go this detailed.
Bro, as detailed as you want, man.
I mean, this is, I got to tell my story the way I got to tell it. Gym, you know, usually recently I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks, which have been huge sources of inspiration as someone who's a creative. Where I got the Diderot effect is listening to an audiobook, and like, I don't know, if you spend your time with intentionality, you can get so much value out of the small moments. And that's kind of what I've been learning. So after the gym, most days I'm either editing content, scripting content, or filming. That's the life of a content creator for my stage, right? Like there are others, like I've connected with some bigger ones who obviously at a higher level because of the income that they generate, that maybe they only post once a month or once every 2 weeks. For me, I'm posting, you know, my goal is to post at least 3 to 5 TikToks or reels for the entire week, and then one YouTube video per week, sometimes two, depending on whether or not I have obligations to a brand of some sort, right? So that takes a lot of planning and executing, right? So usually like Sunday, the day before the week begins, or if you consider that the beginning of the week or whatever it may be, on Sunday, I'm planning out the videos that I want to create. Monday, you know, I'm working out, but I'm also like scripting the videos, I'm filming the videos. And that's just kind of like, it's kind of weird to say, but it's literally a continual process of Monday, edit, film, Tuesday, edit, film, Wednesday, edit, film, Thursday, edit, film, like it's literally my life. I edit and film videos. I talk to the camera every single day. Like this morning before we started recording this episode, I finished up the video that I needed, that needs to go out for tomorrow, right? And then today I'll also write the script for a video that I want to make on Monday, right? And on Sunday, you know, tomorrow I'll make a script for the videos that I want to make for the course of the week, right? Like I want to make a series of like TikToks, or not a series, but a TikTok talking about fashion favorites for the month of February because I made one in January. So at this point, like I have things kind of narrowed down to a bit of a science, but the week is essentially you wake up, you work out, you eat well, of course. But in the times that you're not eating or working or spending time with your family or friends, you're editing videos, you're scripting videos, or you are making videos. That's it.
Yeah, no, dude, I expected something similar. Wow, that's a lot of time filming and editing. And I'm totally with you on the, I started this year going to the gym in the mornings as well, but I'm not doing it at your level. I'm only doing 4 times a week. But
that's pretty much my level.
Dude, have you watched the show on Netflix recently, Physical 100? It's like this Korean show.
I've seen like clips of it, yeah.
Yeah, man. I just finished that whole season and I thought I was, you know, pretty good at the gym. And then like I watched the show and I feel like a total bum. And
they are jacked.
Bro, the things these guys can do. So like after watching that, I've gotten so motivated, man. I've been hitting the gym harder than ever.
I love it, dude. Sometimes you need a show or like a moment to motivate you to get you in gear.
Yeah, definitely. But man, it's pretty interesting to hear about your week, like in case I ever, you know, wanted to do this full time, like just to get an understanding of what it involves. And also for all you you know, content creator hopefuls out there listening, it's not easy, man. It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. I would say I would go even further. I think most people don't understand that everyone has a bit of a different experience, right? What I do is I want to be, like, for myself, I don't want to be pigeonholed to, okay, this Drew Joyner is a YouTuber. Okay, Drew Joyner is a TikToker. Okay, Drew Joyner he makes reels. For me, like, it's important. I want to be as prolific and as quote unquote dominant as I can be on every platform that I'm a part of, to the level I can with the amount of time and energy and work I do. Because I record, film, I do everything myself. So at some point, there will be a moment where it probably does switch over, right? Where, you know, someone else edits the videos. And that's when, you know, business is really going well for me, even though it's starting to go well for me right now. And I feel very fortunate. It's important. But, like, everyone has a different experience. You could be someone who's, you know, really good looking or has a really great sense of style or has a really great collection of footwear. And boom, you have videos that go viral and people love you and you become wisdom. Right. Yeah. Or you could be the exact opposite, right? You could maybe not have those talents that make someone social media worthy or make someone really attractive on social media. You could be a bit of a shorter individual or be from an area or from a region of the world where doesn't really have the access to clothes or whatever you're trying to create content about. You're going to have a different path, and it might even be even more work than I'm putting in. But I've recognized with where I'm at, the talents that I have, the things that I'm able to do, like, I put the work in I want to put in because I don't want to leave any doubt. And also, I want to be known as someone who's not just a YouTuber or just a TikToker or just on Instagram. I want to be able to tell my story in multiple ways on multiple platforms. And I think that's the kind of cool thing about social media, is that you can do that in this current day and age.
Yeah, I mean, as a viewer of your content, I can tell you've gotten very good at that, because it doesn't matter the platform. I feel like you've adjust your content in a way that doesn't matter what the platform is, it's still pretty engaging. It's still, you still want to watch it from start to finish, basically. And yeah, I mean, I think that's one of your strongest points for sure.
Thank you, man.
So far, what has been your coolest moment as a content creator?
I think the coolest moments are when people come up to you and they're like,
for sure,
wait, are you Drew? And I'm like, yes. And I'm with my girlfriend and she's like, what you mean? This is just the goofiest dude right here. Like, this is nobody. But some people, obviously, like, if you watch my videos, people have a lot of respect for what I do, and I appreciate it immensely. Especially young people. Sometimes, like, I've had a moment where a young person kind of like gawked, like I was a celebrity of some sort, which is insane, at just seeing me. So those moments are really cool. But also, I think it's always really special when people reach out via DM and they're like, Drew, like, you know, I watch your videos every week. And they've helped me get through, you know, my girl broke up with me or my guy broke up with me. And like, watching your videos has helped me overcome that. And like, your positivity, and you've helped me grow my style and all these things. Those are probably like the two things, is knowing that you're making an impact on someone's life and you can actually like see it when someone writes something like that, or if they're in person, they're like, yo, what's up, Drew? So, yeah.
Dude, that's a great answer, man. You know, you usually somebody would answer that question like, oh, it was, you know, when this brand sent me this thing for free, you know, something like that. But yeah,
no.
What a great answer, man. That's awesome. All right, man. So you know what we're here for? We're here to talk about shoes, man. So let's break down your collection for me. So first of all, how many pairs you got? And then second of all, if you were to, you know, give your collection ratios as far as brand ratios, like, yeah, what percentage is X brand, what percentage is this brand?
Yeah, I would say I probably have 20 to 25-ish shoes. Like, I mean, I might have a bit more in terms of like just some brands, you know, they are kind and they do send over some stuff. But shoes actually on the rack, probably 20 to 25.
That's solid.
Yeah, I would say I think that for me, I don't really ever want to go beyond that, honestly. Just my personal thing, because my living space, I don't have the room to accommodate all those shoes. So I would say for the breakdown, I would say probably 40% of my entire shoe collection. We're talking about sneakers, including mules, loafers, boots. I would say probably 60% of my collection is sneakers. And of that 60%, 40% are New Balances. Okay. I would say that maybe even more than 40%, maybe 60% are New Balances. And then I kind of have like 10% Adidas, 10% Nike, 10% Saucony. I have some bootlegs as well. 10% like small brands, right? So for New Balance, I love the 990 series. I'm a big 990 guy. 990 V3, 990 V4. I remember getting my first pair of 990 V4s in 2019, I believe, 2018, something like that. And they were on sale, and they were at this shop in Denver that actually shut down, that closed down. And I was so excited to have those pair. And this is before I made content, before I even thought about making content. So I'm a big 990 person. I love the 2002R as well. That's a pair that I have a couple, I mean, a model that I have a couple pairs of. And then for like the other brands, like Adidas, I have the Adidas Orquetro. Literally the box okay. that is holding this computer up is the Adidas Orquetro. I think that's a really underrated shoe model. Collegium, in terms of small brands, fantastic small brand company that makes like luxury sneakers, but like, I don't know, they just do a really good job. And then like the bootlegs I have are like Jordan 1 bootlegs, because there was a whole moment with respect, bootlegs.
Bro, respect for admitting that you got bootlegs, man. That's dope.
For sure, for sure. They aren't, you know, they aren't replicas. They are bootlegs, though. But there are a couple of homies who, you know, during 2020, during the pandemic, that's kind of like the route that they went with their brands, Ore NYC and like Fugazi and things like that. And then like recently, I've been collecting more Sauconys, actually. I've had the opportunity to work with some brands in New York, and like they're working on, you know, Saucony collaborations. Maybe Tomorrow did a collaboration, and then another brand called Color Plus did a collaboration. And so I actually have a decent amount of Sauconys, and I even was able to get my girlfriend a pair. So that's kind of the breakdown. And then I have like the Jordan 1 Lost and Founds. I've always wanted a Chicago. So when I had the opportunity to get those, like, Why would I not do that, right? Like, I just, that's like a sneakerhead's, like, I don't know. Everyone likes that shoe. I like that shoe. So, yeah. And then obviously the Onitsukas too. I forgot to mention the Onitsukas. So I have like two pair of Onitsukas, which is, I would say, another 10% of my collection. So, yeah.
Would you say the 990 V4 is your favorite New Balance model?
You know, I would say that. I probably would have said that 2022. But I have the Jown 990 V3s, and I wore them a ton while in Amsterdam as well. I know you were in Amsterdam, or like near Amsterdam, or near Netherlands. And I wore those so much when I was traveling and stuff, and like it just the subtle difference of the 990 V3. I would maybe edge the 990 V3 above the V4 stylistically right now. I'm enjoying it a bit more.
I agree. But there's supposed to be a lot of Made in USA Teddy Santis 990 V4s actually coming out this year. So maybe you'll probably cop a few pairs. Actually, you mentioned Amsterdam. So you went to Europe last year. Just quick side question. Did you notice anything different about just like the sneakers people typically wear in Europe versus where you're from?
Well, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be presumptuous. Well, yeah, no. Yes, I did definitely notice a bit of a difference, especially in Colorado. People in Colorado don't necessarily dress like with sneakers. There's a lot of active hiking kind of people here, a lot of boots, a lot of Red Wing, a lot of hiking boots, Merrells, and things like that. In Amsterdam, I saw a lot, at the time I was there, 2022, there was a lot more sneakers, a lot more New Balances. In fact, I felt like New Balance was the most popular kind of I was in heaven, honestly. Like all the little Dutch girls and like all like little Dutch dudes were wearing like New Balance. Like, this is fire. Like, I would go to the markets and I would be like, yo, this is fire. Like, I love it. I want to be there. And I met a good friend of mine too, and he's a big New Balance head too. So yeah, there was a lot of New Balance out in the Netherlands and Amsterdam.
Oh, he was the guy. I think I listened to your Beyond the Garment episode. He was the guy you did a end of year wrap up with. Yeah, yep. That was an interesting episode. But you know what? Like Amsterdam in general, though, is a very stylish city. Mm. So
I didn't know that.
Dude, like if you travel a little bit more in Europe, you'll notice every city has totally different footwear. Like you go to London, everyone's rocking like Air Max TNs and Air Max. Air Maxes are huge over there. Berlin, dude, you come to Berlin, it's all about Salomon XT6. Like Salomon XT6 is everywhere over here.
Interesting.
You go to Paris. Yeah, man. Like people roast me on my channel because I got a lot of American. Actually, most of my audience is American, and they see me like talking about Salomon all the time, and they're like, "Yo, why are you wearing this ugly shit?" And I'm like, "Dude, it's like the most popular shoe over here." So
guys got to get with Salomon. Salomon's got some great, great items of footwear. Great items.
Yeah, Salomon has been popping off in Berlin for like last 5 years, and now it's starting to get more popular stateside. Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, and then you go to Paris, it's like Jordans are so popular there compared to most other European cities. So it's crazy how every city in Europe is different like that. All right, man, cool. So like it's good to hear about, you know, New Balance dominating your collection. I think a lot of people probably agree right now that they're probably the biggest, probably the best brand in sneakers right now, the consistency of releases. What are some of your favorite sneakers right now, period, that you like to wear a lot? Or just sneakers that have been released recently that are just some of your favorite that you've noticed? Are there any in particular?
Yeah, I would say recently I've been wowed by the New Balance 1960R.
1906, dude. I think.
1906. 1906. Yeah, right. Yeah, thank you so much. 1906R, I believe that. I think they were showcased in a lot of, you know, different runway looks that I thought actually were really well done, like Aurélie.
Comme des Garçons.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd never really, like, I thought, you know, for me, like, it's a similar model to the 2002R in terms of, like, just midsole kind of look. And I don't know, it just reminds me of the 2002R. But seeing them in the colorways, I saw them online. There's some good options there. So those have caught my eye for sure. In terms of other sneakers that have caught my eye, I'm kind of like, because I've been wearing the Onitsukas a ton, a part of me wants to like buy so many of those freaking shoes because they're $100 retail. And a lot of the colorways look really, really good. The Tigers. So I've been really interested in just kind of looking back at some of those models as well. And then in addition to that, I know you said that New Balance is probably one of the most dominant brands right now. I think what Adidas is doing right now as well, in a very subtle, not even that subtle. If you really like are just, you take the data for what it is, I'm seeing a ton of Sambas and a ton of Gazelles all over the place. And I think, you know, the collaborations that they've come up with, Sean Witherspoon just teased, you know, a lot of some of his colorways with the Gazelle and things of that nature. I think that Adidas is also doing a fantastic job. So I'm looking at those places as well. Sorry for all the people who are maybe Nike or Jordan buffs. Your boy, as much as I do love and appreciate the footwear coming from Nike or Jordan, my heart lies in some of these other ancillary brands. And I don't know why that is. My girlfriend, like, she's a big Jordan. She would rather be in Jordans than any of the stuff that I try to show her, like with New Balance or Adidas. I think she likes sevens and she likes tens.
What? Really?
Yeah, she's a very interesting. Like, she's never, like, you would never see it in her. But you know where she went to high school and just like her experiences, like that's kind of what the kids in her area were wearing, which is interesting. But yeah, for me, I don't know. I've always been a little bit adverse to Nike and Jordan, not for any particular reason besides just personal tastes. But yeah, those are kind of some of the shoes I've been looking at: Onitsukas, Adidas, New Balance. What we've been talking about.
Yeah, definitely. And what about, like, what do you think are some sneakers that you think will be trending this year?
That's an impossibly hard question.
I mean, in your opinion, I mean, you, especially because you're, I mean, you definitely have your eye on fashion trends and what's about to be popular, what's starting to be popular. So when it comes to applying that to sneakers, like, are there some types of silhouettes you see being more popular with what people are normally wearing nowadays as far as, like, you know, their whole fits?
I think that trends, Josh, I can't pull a sneaker that isn't trending or at least kind of on the upward trajectory and tell you that it's going to be trending. Like, that's, I would have to be from the future, right? So I think that the shoes that I see becoming more and more prominent within the next 5 months, the shoes that I just think that, like, during the summer, everyone's going to be wearing these shoes. And you kind of saw it in 2020 and 2021, you saw the just hyper fixation on Dunks and Jordan 1s. And then you have these little kind of side quest moments with the Solomons and with New Balances. And then New Balance becomes its own thing, right? And you see a lot of people wearing 990s. And I go to Amsterdam and everyone's wearing New Balances. Now, when I go back to Amsterdam later this summer, like, am I going to see more of, like, Adidas Sambas? Am I going to see more Gazelles? I think that's kind of where I see the trajectory going, even though they're very popular right now. And people will, like, say, oh, Sambas aren't trendy. They've been around for years and years and years. But you have to understand that if there's an influx of products on the market, that to me indicates some kind of difference in consumer behavior. So I think, my bet, like, which isn't like a, oh, this is a crazy bet. My bet is, I think, you know, Adidas models will continue to trend upward and continue to gain more gravity within the footwear community, especially because the price point is pretty amenable, like $100 USD. You can get them on sale for, you know, in other places in Europe. I don't know what the euro rate is. Maybe it's 99 euros. But yeah, I would say, like, Adidas, Samba, Gazelle. It's not like, I mean, that's like, some people are going to scoff at that and be like, yo, who is this guy? Like, how can he say the freaking Adidas Samba is going to be trending? But I think that it hasn't reached peak trend, and it could inch closer to peak trend later this year. And then it'll kind of die down and then maybe move on to something else. So I think even with New Balance, I think peak trend for New Balance was when the Jown 992s came out. I think it was just that train was going up and up and up and up and up, right? And then you have the 990 V3s from Jown, and you have all these amazing collaborations happening, even collaborations like Stray Rats and other brands that are happening that, like, people are not necessarily paying as much attention to, but it's like butter, like Joe Fresh Goods, it's butter. I think since 2023, late 2022, New Balance, I'm not sure if it's reached peak, but I think that people care less about all the ALD releases because there's so many of them. I think people care less about, they're just a little fatigue happening, right? So in terms of trends, maybe that's more of a nugget of, like, what's inside Drew Joyner's mind right now. So, yeah.
Nah, dude, I don't think you could have answered that question any better. I think you nailed it with which part of the cycle we are at, you know, with New Balance, with Adidas, which part of that trend cycle we're at. I think yeah, you absolutely nailed it. Yeah, I also think we still haven't hit Adidas peak yet, and probably later this year we might.
And I'm totally leaving out, you know, I don't really talk about Nikes or Jordans as much, so I'm sorry. I know you're big on that as well. I don't know if you have any, like, insights in terms of those models. I think also, I mean, you could even talk about how the Jordan 4 had a huge kind of upward trend. And I think that it's hard to be relevant over years and years and years because you have to create such great colorways over and over and over again. Like Amon Meunier, yeah, they do a fantastic job. But you can't have one collaborator carry the load unless you're, you know, Virgil Abloh, right? I mean, RIP, but, like, there are very few people who can generate cultural interest with one shoe or with one collaboration, right? Like, for a long time. So, you know, when it comes to those things, I think that Nike, I think Dunks and things are still incredibly popular. I still think Jordans are still incredibly popular. But in terms of, like, there's a difference between being incredibly popular and kind of leading the charge, right?
I feel you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Nike and Jordan are going to be unpopular, but definitely, definitely when it comes to like currently in the trend cycle, they're probably on their way down for sure. That's what it feels like, at least.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about Nike and Jordan is that there are so many models, and even Adidas, there are so many models that sometimes a model will get some buzz, but it just doesn't reach that mainstream level of attention. Like I remember, and what happened to these Nikes? The Nikes where you don't have to lace them up, you just kind of step into them, but like they're like sold out every, you know what I'm talking about? How do I describe these shoes? The ones where
they didn't have laces?
They didn't have laces. They like, yeah, let me show you my hands. They like folded into a V and then you would like step into them.
Yeah, yeah. And then, okay, man. They were just around for like a minute, like, and then they disappeared.
Yeah, and I thought those were going to be a really big deal for even like non-sneaker fashion people, because
the functionality.
Like, the functionality. Like, what person doesn't want to just step into a pair of shoes and go, right? Like, even older people, people who are disabled, people who can't bend down as well, or like have like motor skill issues. You know what I mean? Like. But they're just gone. And you know, there have been Epic React moments, Vapor Max moments, and different things like that that have happened. But it's interesting the time period we're in right now. It's just, there's so many elements. It's hard to kind of talk about it all.
But I mean, I agree with the most part for what you're saying, though. All right, so next I actually wanted to ask you this, which was, especially as someone who is from the fashion world, right? So when it comes to sneakers, personally, I'm not so much caring that much about comfort because I just want something that looks good personally. So there's always that debate, style versus comfort, right? So for you, like when you're buying sneakers, what do you actually, is there something you put more weight on than the other? Or is it just like, it's got to look good? Style versus comfort, what's more important to you?
There's a distinction that you said. When I'm buying sneakers, when I look at a sneaker, I would say style is the like most interesting aspect of it, right? Like, how does it look when I see it online or when I see it in store? When I wear my sneakers, it becomes, you know, you want both, right? Like you kind of have to have both, for in my opinion. But buying, like I'll buy the Jordan 1 Lost and Founds. Now, have I worn them as much as the Onitsuka Tigers? No. Or like a pair of New Balances? No, because my foot hurts after a certain amount of time. Like I always get like my pinky toe starts to rub and starts to hurt, right? I know my true size. So like even if I went up a size, like it just would be a goofy fit. So when it comes to like buying sneakers, I think aesthetics plays, I mean, it's probably why you like sneakers. Like sneakers look freaking cool. But when it comes to wearing them, you tend like intrinsically or like unbiasedly or not unbiasedly, but like internally you pick the shoes that are comfortable, right? Because if you're going to be walking 25,000 steps in New York or you're in Berlin, like it's hard to stomach always buying or going with the shoe that's uncomfortable. Now, if you know you're going to be in a situation that, okay, I'm going to be at this dinner party from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. I can stomach wearing a pair of sneakers or a pair of shoes that maybe isn't the most comfortable, but, yeah, ideally both, Josh, but I understand it's not possible always.
I think
you nailed it, though.
I think you said a key thing, which was you got to know like how long are you going to be outside for.
Yes.
Like that's what I'm always thinking about. Like for me, my pain tolerance is like, okay, if I know I'm just going to be out like 3 or 4 hours, mm-hmm. I'll wear something that absolutely kills my feet. I'm cool mm-hmm. with it. As long as it like goes with the fit, I'm fine, man.
Yes.
But yeah, if I'm like, you know, traveling somewhere for the weekend, I know I'm going to be doing like 10,000, 20,000 steps. Yeah, I'm taking like my Vomeros with me or my New Balance. You know, like it depends on the situation. I agree with you. But there's a very like, you know, if there's like a Venn diagram of like comfort and style, like there's very few sneakers that I find are just in that, you know, perfect spot of it looks amazing and it's super comfortable, which is why like we talk about, which is like now more than ever, it seems like functionality is really important. Part of the reason why I think like the whole Gorp Core trend has taken off, like, you know, it's like not only does it look good, it's really functional, and that's also part of the reason why New Balance I think has just gotten so popular, right?
Because they,
it's probably one of the only brands that actually do both, right? So
I agree, I agree 100%. I think also, you know, a lot of people are, I mean, sneakerheads do this, but I think if regular folks, like, who buy, you know, they buy one pair of shoe a year, Yeah, I don't know why that sounded weird coming out of my mouth. They buy like one or two pairs of shoe a year, and maybe it's two pairs of Nikes, and they fit relatively the same. But like for us, like we have Nikes, we have Jordan, we have Adidas, we have New Balance, and everyone has a different sizing convention. So like, okay, I wear a size 11 in 990 V3s. Okay, but when I wear the, let's say the Orquetros or something like that from Adidas, 11, while it fits, it's just a smidge and a half size too big, right? I should have maybe gone a half size down, but if I go half size down, maybe it's too small. And with the 2002R, it's a little bit different. So like, there's like a, you know, sizing is another factor when it comes to comfort, and like nailing that is, it plays a pretty big role. And each company has a different sizing convention, and it's something that I think a lot of people, like, they don't factor into when it comes to comfort. Like, maybe if you only were a New Balance guy or only were an Adidas guy, and even if you are only a New Balance guy, like sometimes the 2002R versus the, you know, 990 V1 or 992 or 991, they fit a little bit differently. And it's just kind of like, you got to pick your poison sometimes, because, you know, like you said on that Venn diagram, sometimes it's style over comfort a lot of times.
Right. So, okay. Another popular sneakerhead question, right? So if money was no issue whatsoever, right, you can buy any sneaker that ever existed, right, what sneaker would you buy?
This is my question. My answer is gonna be so lame for this, honestly, because I would say I would have the sneakers I own. I don't like overly glorify any particular model. I think that over the course of like my sneaker journey, like I used to be real, like if you asked me this in 2017 when Ultra Boosts were all the rage, and like there were all these different collaborations with Adidas, I would have said like maybe like the Naked Ultra Boosts, or I would have said like some crazy collaborated Ultra Boost or something like that, or collaborated Yeezy or something like that, or not collaborated Yeezy, but just Yeezy in general. But now, for whatever reason, my brain has gotten to the level where it's like, if I wish I could do the opposite, right? If I had the opportunity to narrow down my collection to one individual sneaker, what sneaker would that be? Like, that to me is the more like interesting question versus having the pinnacle glorified sneaker. And to answer that, I'd probably say the Jaune New Balance 990 V3s. I don't know. I just really love that shoe. So... but yeah, there's no particular model that I'm like, oh, it'd be amazing to have this shoe. Like, I guess once I've just gotten to the level, like I have 20 shoes, right? And every time I picked up one of these shoes, I loved like being able to unbox it and look at it and be like, damn, this shoe is beautiful. But then when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, which one do I pick? Like, I feel the same way about all those shoes. So I guess I just haven't gotten as much life as I would want to out of every shoe that I've owned. And so that's why it's a bit hard for me to answer that question. Sorry to be a lame-o, but that's just what I got.
Dude, that's a great answer, man. Like, I you know, like, I wish I could just say that. Like, oh, yeah, my Grail sneakers are the ones I own. Yeah, I mean, I wish I could say that. But no, there's definitely, you know, some I'd like to buy.
What you got?
But
what are your Grails?
I mean, you know, do you know the Emilion d'Or 991s?
Yes.
Not the 991, sorry. The Emilion d'Or 990 V2 that dropped a while back.
Yeah,
you know, it had like my yellow had laces those.
Yep.
Yo, those are, man, I love those are so damn nice. And
beautiful shoe.
Like my size is like over 2k or 3k right now, so I don't know if I'm ever getting those. Also, like, I was really into like tech wear a while ago, and there's these acronym Air Force Ones. I don't know if you know those ones, the ones that had like a zipper on it, like,
yes, I remember. Yes.
Yeah, so they were like white at the front, orange at the back, and it had like a zipper right down the middle, which it looked really weird, but I thought it was like the coolest thing.
Yeah.
And those two, like, man, I can't get them. They're like the prices in the stratosphere. Insane. Yeah, so those are my grails. But you know what? I'm going to like keep that question that you just had, which is like if I can narrow down my whole collection to one, because like I think I'm going to start asking that in my future podcast interviews. That's an amazing question, man. Because that I think that really makes you think much more than what's your grail.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I mean, the thing about having a grail too, for me at least, like getting your grail, as satisfying as it might be for the, let's give it 20 days that you own the grail. Inevitably, there will be a bit of, damn, I got my grail. Like, is there anything else? Or maybe if you're not like me, maybe you'd be like, I got my grail, like this is perfect. But I think for whatever reason, like in my head, if I were to put a grail tag on a shoe, I'd be like, does that mean I just don't like or I don't care for the other shoes as much? I don't know. It's a kind of convoluted answer to the thing, but let's move on to the next question.
All right, man. So what do you think about sneaker culture right now? You know, like in the last couple of years, I feel like there's been a huge boom in sneaker culture in terms of like a lot of people entering it, maybe some of them for the wrong reasons, like reselling reasons maybe. And throughout the pandemic too, it was crazy. And as far as reselling went in the pandemic, I felt like everyone had that as a side hobby, at least in this sneaker world. Yeah. But like where do you think, like, what do you think of sneaker culture right now? Do you think it's at a healthy place, or do you still think that there's people who, you know, just buy shoes to, you know, keep up with the Joneses, so to speak? You know, like they see their friends rocking sneakers and they just want sneakers to, you know, seem cool. Or is it like people are starting to buy shoes maybe because they're, for the first time, they're actually able to afford sneakers, so they find they spend that money, they buy shoes because they actually love it. Or do you think it's all about like keeping up appearances on Instagram? So do you think sneaker culture is like at a healthy place right now?
That's an interesting question, and I think that, I mean, you probably could talk about this question for the entirety of what we've been talking about. I think the entire time we've been talking, right? I have an interesting perspective, Josh, because I think that the time period in which I grew up in, I'm 25 years old. The majority of like my youth from 2013 to now, 10 years, right? When I was 15 to now I'm 25. I would say the majority of the time I was a young person, the quote unquote sneaker community has been unhealthy, right? People will say, oh man, sneakers, like even when I was a teenager, people would say sneakers isn't what it used to be. It isn't Nike talk, you know what I mean? And we aren't doing the same things as we used to do. And so from my perspective, I would say that I think the collective agreement would say that sneaker culture is not in a healthier place than it was maybe when it first started. And I think that makes sense because, you know, there are a lot of elements that make the sneaker community less a community and more of a business. It's a business, right? You mentioned reselling, and when I see kids who have hundreds of pairs of unreleased sneakers, and I see the CEO or like one of the chief members of Nike's son as a part of that, and I see Michael Jordan's son in Trophy Room, and I see all the controversies that have surrounded sneaker culture when it comes to ascertaining or building wealth, I see a unhealthy place, because I think the community starts from a genuine place of, I care about sneakers. But I think it's, for a lot of people, it has transformed into, how can I make money, right? How can I acquire more wealth through sneakers? Now, it's not for everyone. Everyone doesn't do that, but I think a lot of people do, right? Now, in terms of understanding like why someone buys sneakers, like if you're a young person and they're like, oh, I love the sneaker, versus, oh, I want to keep up with the Joneses, or I want to be like my friends, that's a case by case kind of thing, right? Like every person's going to be a bit different. But I do think sneakers is just, it's just become so much more popular. Like, you have, you know, tons of dudes who maybe who were like really sneaker fanatics in niche communities across the US and across Europe. And then I think now you have more women who are, you know, care definitely about sneakers, which I think is a cool thing to see. And the fact that like there are still spaces for community, like I think about Collegium, for example, the brand that I mentioned before with Nick Sissonbath. He does a fantastic job of keeping it community. Like, he has pop-ups and he gives away things and he makes sure he has a Discord and he talks to people. So every kind of aspect of sneaker culture can probably be picked at, and there's a bit of unhealthiness. And then, like, I think about Collegium, and there's probably some healthy aspects to what they're doing because they really care about the product. But also, oh yeah, if I bring up Collegium, I probably should mention that I think because sneakers has become such a profitable business, you also have to look at the fact that, are companies cutting corners to make even more profits, right? Are the quality of the shoes going down? Is the storytelling becoming less? And is it just about the collaborations? Like, there's a ton of factors, right? So overall, I would say it's probably unhealthy. And then you can probably sprinkle in some pockets of things that are healthy. But overall, it's probably unhealthy because, you know, capitalism and like the drive to grow profits probably is the biggest driver for sneaker culture, not the love of the game. Even though there are collaborations and brands and drops that are for the love of the game, there are some that aren't. And I would say that the majority aren't. That's the best answer I can give.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of what you're saying. I actually have a really like short answer for this. It wouldn't take up a whole podcast. I actually just think that everything changed once StockX started to come around.
That's a really interesting perspective, yeah.
And the reason I say that is because StockX for the first time commoditized sneakers, meaning like now every single sneaker out there had a dollar sign attached to it, because you could literally go online, type the name of the sneaker, and you know exactly what it's worth.
Yep.
And that's a good point. I feel like that changed the whole mindset around sneakers for everyone. So now it's about like, I'm going to buy this shoe because I know how much it's worth, so I know exactly how much people want that shoe. Excellent. So I'm going to buy that shoe. I'm going to go on Instagram. I'm going to flex it. You know, like, it's
excellent point.
It didn't become, I think StockX changed the love for sneakers completely into like, how much can I flex? Yeah, that's at least that's what I see.
Really good point. Really, really good point. Yeah, you're so right. I forgot about StockX, GOAT, eBay. Everybody has a role to play in terms of, yeah, you're right. There's a value associated with it. And that value denotes status within the sneaker community. That value denotes wealth, right? And the ability to flex. Like, flex culture is in part in today's era, flex culture and StockX are in tandem, right? Like they are. And I agree with you.
That's a good point. It became more of a status symbol. So I do think right now it's still at a bit of an unhealthy place. However, I feel like it's starting to change a little bit too. And
yeah, I think so.
People's general resale prices are much lower now than they used to be a couple of years ago. I actually think that's really healthy for the sneaker culture, because now people, you know, they're actually buying shoes because they like the shoes. They don't care if they got it on sale or whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, it's supply and demand too. I mean, how many times can something come out with 80,000 pairs across 5 different brands, and everyone in the sneaker community cares equally about, you know, whatever the math is, 5 times 80,000. How can you care about all of these shoes, right? You just can't. Like if you're a Nike head and you've been loving Nike, or if you're a Dunk person, like SB Dunk person, and you know, you loved the moment that Dunks had again, and there were all this buzz, like maybe you just don't care about New Balance anymore. Like it doesn't interest you. Like, so as a result, the New Balance releases that are on StockX that are being resold, there's a whole 20% of sneakerheads, quote unquote, that just don't care about those, right? There's a whole, like you said, everyone has, you know, their different interests. And I like that too, so.
Yeah, cool, man. So thank you so far for everything, for your time, first of all. And thank you so much for answering all these questions. I guess my last question for you is, what's next for you, man? What's next for Drew Whatadoo? What's coming up for you in 2023? You don't have to give away, of course, any top secret information. But anything you're excited about, any projects you have coming up the pipeline, what's next for Drew Joyner?
When you said what's next, the first thing I thought of was scripting, filming, and editing. literally, that's always what's next. In terms of projects or things like that, I'm not that meticulous. Like I can't tell you what I'm gonna be doing in, I can't tell you what I'm gonna be doing in 6 months from now in terms of like videos. I do have travel plans, so I do plan to travel. I plan to go back across the pond to Europe again at some point during the summer. I plan to go back out to New York pretty soon here, which is exciting. And of course, all of those things will include videos and people and linking up with brands and those kind of things, which I'm excited for. So that's kind of what I have in the near future. And then just continue to create, tell stories, and hopefully bring a bit of joy to people's lives with the videos I create. So yeah, that's what's coming up.
That's dope, man. I'm excited to hear all the content you got coming up, man. As always, like I think I listened to pretty much every episode of Beyond the Garment. So
shout out to you for that.
So yeah, man. Yeah, looking forward to it. Thank you once again for joining the Kickback Pod. I'm sure the listeners are gonna absolutely love this episode. So yeah, man, Drew Whatadoo, thank you. And to all my listeners too, shout out for, as always, listening in every single week. And thank you for all the positive feedback that you guys leave. And if you guys enjoy the podcast, as always, please make sure you drop a 5-star review on Spotify and iTunes. And if you don't already follow the pod, just hit that little follow, that little cross you see on the top right on Spotify. Just hit that little follow button. That really helps out the pod. Besides that, guys, y'all have a lovely couple of weeks, and we'll catch you in the next pod. Peace.